Hello. You're about to listen to one of our audio-only webcasts, which was taken from one of our popular video webcasts. We'd love to get your feedback on how valuable and effective this format is for you. After you listen, please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio/survey to complete a quick evaluation. That's webcastaudio.com/survey. Thanks for the feedback and enjoy this podcast.
Hello, I would like to welcome you to today's TechNet webcast, SharePoint Security from Service Accounts to Item Level Access. For more Microsoft webcasts, go to microsoft.com/webcasts. I would now like to introduce today's presenter, Sean Travers. Sean's delivered over 500 live events to more than 25,000 IT pros, partners, and resellers in his distinguished Microsoft career. He's also a certified information systems auditor and a certified information systems security professional. Sean loves playing with new technologies in both hardware and software, but his greatest reward comes from helping other IT pros solve problems and tackle unfamiliar products. If Sean has been considered choosing Bill Gates as his role model, but ultimately he settled on his father. If NASA came calling, Sean would jump at the opportunity to experience space travel and explore new planets. Sean, I'll hand it over to you.
Thanks so much, Eric. Boy, I always love that introduction. I think we need to update that one. But, yeah, I'm glad to see so many people here today. We've got an awesome, awesome session. I think you all are going to be very happy, and you're going to go away with some good understanding of how permissioning works inside of SharePoint. If that's what you came for today, you're going to be in good shape. If not, there are lots of other webcasts on SharePoint. You might check it out and see if something else meets your needs a little bit better. So we're going to go through all the way down to item level access, permissioning in our demonstration down to the folder level, and so you'll see quite a bit of activity demonstration wise, and we'll also go through quite a bit of background and just understanding what the fundamentals are of the new SharePoint security system. There is quite a bit of change since if you haven't played with SharePoint in a little while, and so you're going to get kind of familiar with the changes. And I'll try to backtrack a little bit, and make sure everybody's comfortable, you know, relating what they already know to what's kind of newer here, and so we'll talk about that as we go along. Again, thanks to Brian for showing up today. We are very lucky to have him. So if you have questions as you go along, please do feel free to ask, and I know he will be happy to address those as we go. All right, so getting started. First thing, we just want to know what kind of, let's go a little more detail into what we're going to cover. We'll start off talking about the authentication process, and there are several different providers that we offer inside of Office SharePoint Server 2007, which, by the way, is the replacement for SharePoint Portal Server. So if you weren't familiar with that, we do have a new name for it and a lot of fundamental changes to it, so that's why we go through that today. It's called Office SharePoint Server 2007. I'll just probably refer to it as SharePoint 2007 just for time's sake during the rest of the session. So we're going to go through some of the permissions of that, essentially how we implement and utilize web farms in this development of our SharePoint security. If you have background experience with Windows SharePoint Services 2.0 or Microsoft Windows as part of Microsoft Windows Server 2003 and kind of how that was set up, that'll be a little bit helpful. I'll talk about that briefly. But in general, you're going to be okay even if you don't have a great deal of familiarity with that because there have been some pretty good changes. And then if you knew, you know, past versions of SharePoint Portal Server 2003, that will help as well. So let's first off talk about authenticating. And there are kind of two main aspects to the authentication process with Windows or with ASP.NET. All right, and we'll work into permissions and then configuring that web form. So these are kind of the overall big three buckets we're going to walk through. So first off, what is the security environment, the context that we're going to be dealing with specifically in the webcast today? And today we're going to spend our time talking about kind of an internal team server, right? So this is a internal facing, it'd be addressing, and specifically our scenario, we'll be addressing, you know, a sales team, right? So a new sales team might need to share information via SharePoint, as documents about sales calls, information about customer sites, the information about different pricing, whatever information they might need, that's the kind of stuff we're going to put onto our SharePoint portal site. And we're going to provide this internal team with the ability to kind of self-host, right? So we don't have to want to do the IT hosted environment in this particular scenario. Now, there are kind of four different ways you can configure the security for Microsoft Office SharePoint Portal Server, or SharePoint Server 2007. And the four main ways are the internal team, the IT hosted, right, which would be a little bit of a different security context, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We also have the external team scenario, where you might be providing access to a shared website for your partners or any extranet scenario. And then finally, kind of the anonymous access, which is to provide access for users coming in from outside the web who you may not know, right, from outside of your internal network, from the internet. All right. There are different security guidance, actually documents from Microsoft for each one of these different scenarios. For example, the security guidance for an internal IT hosted environment really targets an IT team, and they're going to be doing the hosting of the SharePoint services, Office SharePoint web applications and sites for multiple teams and departments, right? So kind of we're not really going into multiple teams, multiple departments for our scenario, and it would involve typically lots of servers. It would be the IT hosted environment. They're going to spend a lot of time focusing on securing server-to-server communication, client-server communication, of course, as well, which we'll be doing today as well, hardening these servers for specific roles, and kind of working through all the fundamentals of that IT hosted server farm environment. All right. The external environment is really targeted, if you were going to read the guidance that we provide on that, is really targeted to hosting content for users who don't really belong generally on your network, right? They're going to be an extranet or a partner. And so what that guidance will focus on is talking about, you know, it's intended for remote support, where employees are working from home, they're traveling, they might need access without logging on, VPNing into the corporate network. And so guidance for that, and also for, of course, the extranet scenario, is typically going to involve a lot of protecting of back-end servers from direct user interaction. So we'll focus on providing, you know, a secure server farm with external-facing internet servers, right? Then there's the external anonymous environment, which is targeted to allow anonymous access to content while protecting our server farm at the same time. So this would involve multiple farms for testing, staging, publishing content. And so those are kind of the main kind of ways that you can configure your security environment. And our scenario, we're just going to be working through kind of this internal team composition. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about providing an IT-hosted, large server farm solution, protecting server-to-server communication. Although there is a definite requirement to think about that if you are in a larger environment, we're going to focus on the internal team. Now, the benefit is, even if you are in a larger company today and you're looking to set up a large hosted environment, the fundamentals you learn today are still going to be very important, right? They're still fundamental to providing that secure access to your internal teams. We're just not going to go through the higher level server farm stuff as much, okay? So I just wanted to kind of set you up as to where we were focusing today. All right, so user authentication. We all know this is the process that we use to validate someone's identity and prove that they are who they say they are. And that's specifically, we're going to be doing user authentication in SharePoint whenever someone tries to access a website or a network resource that's hosted on that SharePoint server, right? So we manage security in general. How do we do that today? Well, everybody knows if you have a Windows environment, you're managing your security from using users and security groups. Right, inside of Active Directory. You can't use distribution lists, right, because distribution lists do not allow for a security permission to be applied inside of a Windows environment. DLs are just used to send out emails. So we're using security groups, we're using users. Security groups tend to be used because it's easier to manage instead of managing individual users. Well, we all know that. Okay, but user authentication for Windows SharePoint services is based upon IIS authentication, okay? So Windows SharePoint services, which is the fundamental building block for SharePoint 2007, right, can be used with essentially three main ways to authenticate. You can either provide anonymous authentication, basic authentication, or integrated Windows authentication. Now, some people also will say, you know, certificate authentication. So I guess there really are four different ways to secure IIS, right? Now, you choose that authentication method that you want to use whenever you set up your web server. When you set up those websites, you can pick and choose which option you want to pick. You can't change the authentication method by using Windows SharePoint Services administration tools. You have to use the IIS admin tool for your server computer to change the authentication method. All right. So what I'm trying to get at here is that, you know, IIS is where you set the type of authentication, be it anonymous authentication, basic authentication, Windows authentication, or certificate. All right. Now, so far so good. I don't think I've probably lost anybody on kind of the fundamentals of what we're focusing on. Of course, a lot of the administration for individual item level and list level permissions are done within the SharePoint's tool set. But the big overall picture of how you're going to authenticate people, that's configured inside of IIS. All right. And you pick one of those four methods. And then we still use security groups and individual users from Windows. Now, here's another option. This is where it gets interesting. So authentication and WSS, I'm just going to use the common terminology there, 2.0, right? So Windows SharePoint Services 2.0. It's based on Windows accounts and their associated security IDs, right? So this is going back a little bit to what you might already be familiar with if you played with WSS 2.0 in the past. And essentially what this means is that, you know, all Windows SharePoint Services are tightly coupled with Active Directory in 2.0, right? It was a way to implement WSS 2.0 without Active Directory, but that was in the very smallest deployments. You would use local user accounts, but generally we linked everything very tightly, coupled it very tightly with Active Directory, and that dependency was okay, right, for companies that already deployed Active Directory when they started using WSS 2.0. And then when SharePoint Server 2003 came out, the portal server, they were able to build good intranet-based solutions using that Active Directory coupling for security, right? Now, using Windows SharePoint Services 2.0 and Windows SharePoint Portal Server 2003 was challenging for other companies who were building extranet-based solutions, right? So it was fine to tightly couple it with AD for intranet stuff, but when I wanted to go to the internet and authenticate people out there, you can forget about it. I'm not going to add individual Active Directory users for all of these anonymous people coming in from the web. So the tight coupling in that case, when I wanted to build an extranet-based solution, really fell apart. So what we did is we said, okay, let's redesign authentication in SharePoint and Windows SharePoint Services 3.0, which is the current version that we're talking about today, right? So all of that changes now because authentication has essentially been redesigned on top of a new authentication provider infrastructure. And this is introduced with ASP.NET 2.0, right? So if you don't want to maintain user accounts for Windows SharePoint Services 3.0 and SharePoint Server 2007 sites inside of Active Directory, that's fine, because you can just build or acquire the ASP.NET authentication provider, right? And it's been designed to store and manage user accounts in a different identity repository, and that identity repository is typically going to be SQL. So now, again, the big picture is when ASP.NET 2.0 is used, we can use forms-based authentication and store new user accounts from the internet inside of a SQL Server database. So this authentication is essentially configured for use with WSS 3.0. It's very easy to do. We're actually going to do it in our last demo today. And so with a little effort on your part, we can essentially provide WSS 3.0 sites on the internet and allow unknown users to come in and register themselves via a web form as members, put their account inside of SQL, and provide that secure access and not have the concerns about using Active Directory for internet users. So this is kind of bringing all the best of all worlds together. So if you've heard that SharePoint is going to be used a lot more frequently now for, you know, authentication over the web, that's true. And it's much easier to do because we kind of redesign this infrastructure. All right? So ASP.NET, let's go through a little more detail on that. If you're not familiar with it, no problem. Let's cover it really quick. So it's essentially, it has, as part of it, there's a lot of parts to ASP.NET, but the part we're going to be talking about is a pluggable authentication framework. Right? So it's pluggable, meaning I can plug in different authentication providers, however I want to do that. So user identity here is independent from operating system identity. So regardless of how I've logged on to my Windows machine, I have a, and I can link that, but essentially it's independent, and then I can link that to a group inside of SharePoint, right? So the authentication has custom code. It can handle the authentication on its own. And there are essentially two related providers here. So first is the membership provider, and that's utilized based on user identities. And second, there's a role provider, which offers roles, groups, and attributes for a user. Does that make sense? It's not that complicated. Essentially, as part of my authentication, I have a role and I'm a member of a particular group, right? So groups and roles is what we're looking at here, which is not too different from past SharePoint. So groups and roles are part of the ASP.NET authentication framework already. Now there are several out-of-the-box providers that already do ASP.NET authentication. One that's included is inside of Office SharePoint 2007 is an LDAP pluggable provider. This is in addition to the Active Directory provider. So clearly, some people are still going to want to use AD, for intranet sites, and you certainly are encouraged to do that. There's an Active Directory provider built in. If you incorporate ASP.NET 2.0, you can also use the pluggable LDAP provider for authenticating users to any LDAP repository, right? SQL Server is the relational database used for storing all the content, data, and configuration info that Office SharePoint Server 2007 contains, and so that hasn't really changed. And SQL Server 2005 is the recommended way to go, but you can even use SQL Server 2000 if you want, right? Another question that frequently comes up is, can I use SQL Server 2005 Express for this to store this information? Yes, you can. In fact, that's included as a default part of the install. It depends upon how large you want to scale, and I don't think that's too surprising to anybody. So use 2005 if you got it, but you can use SQL Server 2000 as well. If you want to go with the cheap route and you don't think you're going to grow too big, SQL Server 2005 Express is fine as well. So Active Directory, or essentially on a single domain, authentication is available to you, but you aren't limited to AD for SharePoint 2007. So now you can use, I'm just summarizing here what we've kind of gone through, we can essentially use any ASP.NET Forms authentication provider, and this offers a lot of extensibility for authenticating users. You can use it very effectively for external partner authentication. It's an ideal solution, really, for most people, right? Whatever solution you want to go with, you can plug that in. So for authentication, though, you'll probably also want to configure your applications, right? So if you're going to be running web applications, we're going to make sure these are configured properly. So the .NET framework and ASP.NET 2.0 in particular uses XML formatted config files. Right? So one of the XML config files is called machine.config. All right, so machine.config is essentially a text-based XML file. It provides for configuration settings for a single application. You can create a web.config file as well. It's automatically created for you, the web.config file. Web.config can be modified to affect the behavior of that .NET application on the whole system. So essentially, there's two components here. So there's machine.config. That's for configuring the system-wide settings for your behavior of your .NET applications and how they're going to authenticate. Then you've got the web.config file, which is in the root folder of an application. And these override the settings of the machine.config file, okay? But they're for a single application, not for the whole system. And finally, we also can extend a web application using the central administration site. So for Windows SharePoint services or Office SharePoint server, we automatically create that web.config file for the web application, and we have recommendations for applying that web.config file and making changes to it to effectively change the way your applications would behave. And so if you go to download.microsoft.com and just do a search on Secure Your Web Server Editions, right, this is a good document out there I thought I'd point out for you that will give you more detail on these different configuration files and how you can custom create authentication for your custom web applications that you might have out there. So it's called Secure Your Web Server Editions. Just get it from download.microsoft.com. All right, let's one more slide, and then we're going to jump into a demo. I want to make sure we get to a demo here and get you guys comfortable with the interface a little bit. So first off, there are some limitations here that we should address, okay, when you use ASP.NET authentication, right, as opposed to kind of tying it with Active Directory as you can and as we have in the past. So first thing is authentications can only be used with browser clients. Right? So if you have a search crawler, it's limited to where it must use Windows. Right? So a lot of this stuff isn't going to be put into the search index. All right, if you're using ASP.NET authentication. Also, if you have a lot of integration with Office, right? So for your, a lot of times, you know, people will add calendar appointments and all this other stuff. Some of this stuff is going to be degraded. In other words, you won't have as much interaction with Office if you use the ASP.NET authentication scheme. Additionally, what else? Let's see, there's only one authentication type per web application. So this is kind of a limitation here as well. So with ASP.NET authentication, there are no Windows and forms in the same domain. You can't have Windows authentication and forms authentication in the same domain. And essentially, there can only be one provider pair per domain. All right. So that essentially limits you for that domain scenario. And then finally, I guess the last one I'd mention is that forms accounts are used instead of Windows. What else? So what does that imply? Well, the Forms user is not the same as the Windows user, so there may be some discrepancies when authenticating back and forth between different environments. All right? So those are the downsides. The upsides are you don't have to go that route, right? So you have a choice. Having a choice is good. So you can decide, oh, ASP.NET isn't going to work for me. I need that tight coupling with Office, right? So maybe I'll continue to stick with the AD. Based authentication. So you have your option as to what you want to go with. All right, let's jump into a demonstration here. So for this one, we're just going to show, you know, we start out pretty simple, right? Because I recognize that some of us may not have played with this stuff extensively yet. And so we're going to start out just with creating a group, adding users to that group, and creating a permission level. All right, and so in this case, you know, we'll show you how to use those groups and permissions. So I'm going to share out. Essentially, what I have here is a Windows Server 2003 Enterprise Edition box. Could be any Windows Server 2003. And I've got SharePoint 3.0 as well as the SharePoint 2007 installed. All right?
Sean,
yeah.
I'm seeing a gray screen currently.
You didn't want to see gray? I mean, gray is a good color.
It's a nice looking gray, but let's try that again.
Here. Well, all right, let me see what I can do. Let's see if I try resharing this sucker. Pick this out. And are you seeing anything now?
No, I'm going to pause the recording 1 second here. Okay, well, we'll just go right ahead then.
Well, now, when I'm sharing my entire desktop here, what do you see? Are you seeing the live meeting in the background? Should I go to full screen?
Almost. Okay, Sean, go ahead with your demo.
Yep, sorry for the inconvenience, folks. Actually, worked out pretty well. We can jump right back into the demo right at the beginning. And so what we're going to do, again, is just to set up users and group permissions here. And so first off, I'm going to start out with the SharePoint 3.0 central administration tool. Right? I'm logged in here as an administrator. And so we get a, kind of a pop-up in Internet Explorer. This provides us to do central administration. So we're going to first create a group that will be used for our sales and marketing department. All right, so we're at the site level here. So by creating a group for our department, what we're going to be able to do is isolate permissions and roles for each individual within that group, right, as well. So this is a benefit in permission maintenance in the future, so I can continue on. So let me go ahead and click on my application management. This is where you start out when you want to go and and drill down and do specific configuration of group and user settings is the best way to go. And so if I look under my actions here, I'll be able to jump down and essentially go to my site settings. And so we'll see users and permissions as one of my options here. And all I'm going to do is manage people and groups. Now, if you've already been playing with WSS 3.0, this should look pretty familiar to you. So we can see we have a couple of built-in groups here, called one called built-in administrators, and then there's the Litware Inc. administrator. And so what I want to do is, currently, as we got a system administrator set up, what I want to do is now create that new group for our sales team. And so this is pretty easy to do. So we go new, say new group. The name of the group is going to be sales. I'll give it a friendly description here. It's the sales/marketing department. Now, remember, this isn't creating any groups or security groups inside of AD or anything like that. At this point, it's just creating a local group for the WSS management side. Okay, it's not going to be tied to anything yet, so I've got to tie it in to some type of login. And again, there are two ways we could do that. We could use the ASP.NET login, right? Or we could use the Active Directory login. We're going to use, for this particular scenario, first time off, we're just going to use the AD side. All right, so we've got our user, we've got a group owner system account. That's the account that you can use at any time to come back and manage this group. So the next step is to essentially identify what kind of permissions we want to use. And so you can see you can give them full control, which they would have full control to manage permissions, settings, creating lists, whatever they need to do. But most of the time for contributing individuals like a sales team might be, you would choose the contribute permission level. Now this is one of the default levels. Again, you can see here there's four. Full control is for administrators only. Design would be for self-hosted environments. The IT savvy individual inside of the sales team perhaps, so they can create and design their own lists and do a lot of customizations. Contribute is for the average member, right? So we also call it the member role. And then we have the read role for anonymous access, right? For people who outside of, or not even anonymous access, could be anybody outside of your particular team. So if someone from the HR team wanted to be able to see the sales, you know, site, then they would get the read permission. Pretty obvious stuff. All right, so let's see. We'll go with the contribute option. And I'll just go ahead and say create. And so currently we have our new sales group created, but we have permissions associated with that. And so the next step is to go ahead and add some users in here. And so to add a user, I'll just click new, add users. You can see the central administration comes up. And so I'm actually adding users for this group, which is a site level or central level group. And what we'll call this is type in some users here. So just type in their friendly name from AD. Right, so that's where these are coming from. We can check those names. Looks like Dave Richards comes up. Put a semicolon between new names is the separator. So Cesar Garcia, perhaps. If you want to go into the actual directory and manage it there, you can go in and type in their name here. So Amy Alberts. And check that name out. There she appears. So click Add, say OK. So we've got now essentially three separate users. They're all part of the new sales team, and they're going to be able to contribute to the sales site, right? And so in order to finalize this process, I've got to make sure, first of all, we are on the sales contribute group, right? The contribute is their permission. It's in brackets there. The sales is the actual group name. A lot of times this will default to farm administrators if you haven't come in the way I did, so make sure you're careful about selecting the appropriate group here. So sales. I'm not going to give permissions directly. They're only going to get permissions through this particular group and permission up here. For my scenario, you could send a welcome email to the new users, letting them know about the site that they're now granted access to or the new group they're granted access to. And I'm just going to turn off that send welcome email message to save on time during my demo here. So there's my three new users contained within this new group. So a permission, now we're going to change the permission level. So right now we've just gone with kind of one of the default permission levels, which is contribute. So right away, let's get a little bit more advanced, and we're going to create a custom permission. Again, not terribly difficult, but a little bit more advanced than what we just did. So what we want to do first is go up back up to site permissions here. And what will come up is this central administration page again. And what I'm going to do is go back to my sales group. Right? You can see it's a SharePoint group. You can see the username and the specific permissions they have. And what I want to do is drill down into the permission levels. Right? And when the permission levels page comes up, we'll see that we can add a permission level, specifically a new customized one that we're going to create. Now, prior to Windows SharePoint Services, permission levels were called site groups, remember? So if you are familiar with site groups, you understand permission levels. It's the same concept. And essentially, for each permission level, you can configure up to 33 different permissions. So WSS 3.0 includes 33 permissions. That makes it easy to remember, right? 3.0 equals 33, right? So these are used in essentially the five default permission levels already, right? So the ones we talked about, the full control, contribute, design, read-only, these are already included there. But you can change which permissions are included in a particular permission level, except for full control. You can't really change that one. That one we figure you're not going to want to change. What I'm doing in this case, instead of changing the already default permission level, I'm just going to create my own custom one again. So we're going to call this one here Sales. You can see, by the way, the 33 permissions. I'll scroll down kind of quickly here, and you can see a few of those that come up here. There's a lot. And by default, I essentially have no permissions created. So, in fact, what I'm going to do here is, to make it a little easier on myself, I'm going to start with one of my initial templates. I'm going to go back to that contribute template instead so I don't have to check off every box individually. I'm going to save myself a little time and energy. So I'll hit cancel first. And then what we'll do is we'll go to contribute, and we'll jump down and choose copy permission level. And now, when I type in sales at the top and create my new permission level, you can see that many of the permissions are already selected off. So I don't have to go through and check each box individually. It's just a faster way to build this new permission level. So let's give it a good description before we move on here. Call it Sales Marketing Department. And now I'm ready to customize it a little bit. So I will check off a few boxes to get that customization that I need. Let's say that instead of deleting items and versions, I don't want them to be able to delete anything. So I'm going to get rid of delete items and delete versions. And so they won't have the permission to delete items on this in any of the site lists. I will say, though, that they do need to be able to maybe approve, right? I'm scrolling down here. Right, so we want to select off to allow them to approve items. Let's find that in my list here. There we go. It was right near the top where I forgot to look. And we'll say create. So we just customized the contribute permission level a little bit. So there's my new sales permission level. And now I'm associating that, right, with the sales group that I created earlier. All right, so we have the sales permission level. And I'll go up to permissions here. And we'll select off sales. And you can see it's still associated with the contribute there. So I want to go to my actions and say edit user permissions. And I'll choose off, instead of contribute here, I'll choose sales and marketing department, right? The new permission I just created. If I click OK, you can see now their permissions are this custom sales permission that I created. So just to kind of give you an idea here, managing permissions in this case was all done at the parent level. Now, why did I do that, right? Why did I manage all this at the top site level? That's because managing permissions of a parent site affects that parent site and also affects any subsites. So if I had a whole bunch of subsites in my SharePoint hierarchy, they would all be affected by this change. So be careful, by the way, before you manage permissions of your parent site, really think about, you know, how these changes might affect other sites, because you could certainly cause a lot of ruckus, right, a lot of problem if you go around changing your parent level site settings for permissions and then having that affect everybody else. So Permission levels are managed either at the site level or at a sub-site that has unique permissions. In other words, if a sub-site is not inheriting permissions from a parent, then you can manage permissions there as well, right? So take a different scenario. Let's say we have a sub-site, in other words, like a sub-website in there. We want to manage the site settings for that particular permissions for us, the group in there. If I want to be able to do that, I have to first stop the inheritance from the parent site. Right? If I stop the inheritance, then I can go through and manage that sub-site permission level on my own individually. So all we did there was we first created a group called sales. We added some users to that group. We set permissions using the default option, the permission level called contribute, and then we created a custom permission level using the contribute permission level as a template and then customized that a little bit. And so now we've got a sales team, and within this this parent site and all sub-sites, they've got this sales, right, permission level. So if I were to log on to as any one of those users, I would have that permission level for my entire SharePoint hierarchy at this point. All right, so let's see. What next? Let's jump off. Jump back to our slides here. And take a look at our agenda, see where we stand. So next thing we want to do is kind of go through a little more detail about how we can better manage permissions. So SharePoint groups can, you know, kind of create this managed permissions experience, right? So by default, there are essentially three groups that can be used here. So owners are full control access. Members, which is like that contribute permission level, right, for lists and libraries, or visitors who just need read-only access, don't need to be able to contribute, make any list, add any list items, or remove anything. Through these groups, we're essentially able to integrate with the user information list. So SharePoint groups can be assigned permissions anywhere in the site collection. So SharePoint 2007 provides these permission levels. And the number of permission levels is not fixed, though. I mean, you can essentially have 8 default permission levels for publishing-enabled sites. Viewer, design, contribute, read. A few we didn't talk about as well. Limited access, approver, hierarchy, and manager. So you can also create permission levels and configure the rights for them on your own. Full control says the user has full control over that item, whatever it might be. Design rights can be applied to a user. That allows them to view, add, update, delete, approve, and customize. That's the next highest level. Contribute permissions allow users to view, add, update, and delete. Right? So they can't approve items or customize. As we just showed, when I went and modified that contribute permission level, I added the approve ability to approve items because that by default is not there. A user just has read-only, so update. They're not able to update anything, right? So they're not able to add, update, or delete anything. All right, so we kind of got that. I think we've got that pretty well understood, right? Kind of walk through the different scenarios of what a user can and can't do based upon their permission level. Now, let's go into a little more detail, right? So this is probably what a lot of us came for, right? So in some cases, you may want to perform a kind of a more of a fine-grained authorization. And that would be based upon the roles of each user, right? So, for example, one user may need to have read-write permissions on an item, right? While another would require read-only. So in SharePoint 2007, there are various kind of new securable objects available, such as website, lists, libraries. And more importantly, what we're talking about here is those new securable objects are also available in folders and within the lists and libraries and documents or even down to the list item level. So those securable objects go down to the list item level. And so there's a user interface that's available to manage this from top to bottom. And so you're going to have consistent access of permission levels across all of these different item types. So where you're going to be able to apply the same levels is with SharePoint 2007. And we're also now going to be able to inherit permissions from parents or unique permissions specifically down to the item level. All right, so what is this? So let's talk a little bit about administrators before we move forward and get to our next demonstration here. The site collection administrators are users with full control over all content in the site collection. All right. Now, there's another type of administrator, right? That's called the central administrator. Right? Central administrators no longer have default full access to content. So that's the difference between a site collection administrator and a central administrator, is that a central administrator can grant themselves access to content, but essentially they now have grant access to security policies, site collection owners, administrators. So they're the ones that kind of manage the overall server. Site collection administrators are users with full control over content in the site collection. Just a little different, a different type of administrator. So what else could site collection administrators do? Well, they can do things like fix lockouts. They can recover items from this second level recycle bin. So recovery and access is no longer required to be done by the central administrator. The site collection administrator can do a majority of that stuff. And one thing is that was kind of a challenge in the past is now the site collection administrator cannot be removed from permissions. So this person can maintain their permissions without having another user remove his or her rights, right? So if you're the content owner for that sales team, then you should always be able to maintain that control and not have an IT admin, low-level IT admin, or somebody else knock you out of that. So central administrators by default have no access to, have no full access to content. They can grant themselves access, though, which is probably a good thing, right, for recovery or other purposes. And whenever their permissions are changed or they're granted access to content, this information is logged, right, so that we can be aware of that information as high-level admin. So we're not going to be surprised suddenly one day where someone has all these permissions and how did they get them, right? We'll be able to go through the log and find out where they came from. So there are a wide variety. In SharePoint 2007, there are kind of a large number of new permissions that are available. So, now, for example, first, we're now able to edit user information, such as a display name or email. Right? And this is done on the SharePoint site itself. New in 2007 also is the ability to view or delete versions, right, of documents. We can... So using, you know, back-end shadow copy technology. The creation of alerts is now separated from new items, right, from view items. So you can now create alerts from other people. The enumerate permissions is another tool. It's now available in SharePoint 2007, right? So we can read the permissions even if we aren't able to change them. So this is great for creating reports and things. Open items, it says the view of... We can now view the source of server files, like ASPX files, in open items. We can also set permissions to view application pages. What else? Another added permission is the use of remote interfaces. So if you want to set up permissions, for example, to use remote interfaces like SOAP or something, that permission is now available. Finally, I guess... Just to summarize some of the new ones that we have here, like you can set permissions to client integration features. So, for example, if you have you can create a permission to use the integration features for applications like Office. You can manage those pages. Right. So some of the different ones that we've talked about. So there's also now the availability for anonymous access. So anonymous authentication allows us to grant access to users who do not have server accounts, so people visiting a website. IIS has had anonymous access forever, right? And essentially what IIS does is it impersonates an anonymous account. If you want to enable anonymous access to your SharePoint site, you have to first go into IIS to enable it for that site. So with SharePoint 2007, by the way, this feature is disabled and turned off by default. So you have to specifically go in and enable it if you want that to be available. Go in and enable it first on IIS and then configure it on the SharePoint side. So there's a list level control where you can read, add, update, and delete these settings, right? And so if there's a read-only access, there's a read-only access for the library level control. We'll show that a little bit more in the demonstration. So by default, anonymous access has incredibly reduced permissions, of course, right? We don't want to give anonymous access rights to be able to add items, delete items, things like that, change permissions, of course. So on most occasions, we're just going to go with read-only access. So there's no access to remote interfaces, to client integration. That's a downside, right, of using anonymous access. So we're not going to be able to tie into the Office suite. We're not going to be able to tie into the client machine. We're not going to be able to configure remote interfaces and things like that to better facilitate that that process. But other than that, though, anonymous access can be configurable through the object model. So there's no folder or item level control with anonymous access. So there's no folder or item level control with anonymous access. I suppose there are hard-coded limitations, right? So where there are no anonymous authoring of documents or administration, but you can modify those specifically hard-coded if you need to. But that's way out of the box and out of the scope of today's session. So the use of shared services is really a positive thing, right, overall for SharePoint 2007. So within these data services, you might wonder what services and tools can be used, right? So this is similar, I guess, conceptually, if you look back to SharePoint Portal Server 2003, is in that the shared services component has been completely restructured and redesigned for 2007 using a new services provider model. So shared services includes virtually all of the services that are used by lots of applications in SharePoint 2007. So what you use here is called a business data catalog. It's a catalog of business applications that are areas of interest to SharePoint 2007 users. It essentially bridges the gap between the portal and the business applications out there. And it does that by bringing in key data from various applications to the SharePoint sites, lists, search, user profiles. So the business data catalog is the key infrastructural component around which most of these other business data features in SharePoint 2007 are built. It provides impersonation, delegation, where it contains Kerberos constrained delegation, as well as Office single sign-on. So the BDC is a trusted subsystem within the SharePoint 2007 product. So what we're going to do next, we're going to quickly actually go through a little bit of the security policy stuff, and we're going to jump straight into creating that list item permissions. So within security policy, the central enforced permissions for all sites are in that web application. So the grant deny, the deny all permissions, the deny write permissions, they're contained within the web app. So the grant and deny permissions are available, and they're actually bound to the web application and the zone. So let me give you an example, and it might bring it together for you. So you could use full read access when searching crawling accounts, auditors, legal compliance, but then deny all permissions could be used for security control and regulatory compliance. So the deny write scenario could be used with the extranet essentially locked down. So here are some of the new security configurations available. It's kind of interesting. So you have the rights mask. You've got block types. So you can block specific file types, say, .docx files or whatever you want. There's a form digest timeout. So if you want to have a timeout, if someone's taking too long entering form, you can do that. Code access security to prevent code from being entered in through your site. Virus scanning, all right? So a lot of that can be done as well. So the Office Single Sign-On actually creates credentials for a server-to-server hop if you want to use that single sign-on from Office. So they have unique or shared aspects. Let's take a look actually at a demonstration on this on list item permissions to help bring all this stuff together. You can see it's not as complicated as you might think or actually as it might sound at time from time to time. So in this demo, what we're going to do is we're going to show how to use permissions on an item level basis. Excuse me. And let me know if this doesn't come up again, Eric, but I'm hoping...
Actually, I'm seeing it this time, so I guess that was just a fluke. There were a lot of people who were saying before they were seeing it, so I'm not sure.
All right, so we'll assume it looks good. Let us know if it's not. And so what we're going to do here, again, we're going to go into the item level basis. So this is a pretty simple process. So we're going to go into our site actions list, and we're going to choose that site settings again. Just kind of bring this back up to that top. Okay, I'm on the central administration side. Under site administration now, I'm going to go ahead and go to site libraries and lists. And so if there are particular lists, libraries, folders, even folders within a list or a library, you can anything that contains sensitive data, you can use those fine-grained permissions, which is what we're going to do now, to grant permissions to a specific SharePoint group or to an individual user. But remember, I mean, doing this process is a pretty time-consuming task. So you can see we're getting now a list of our various lists, right, from this site. And if I pull down one, let's say job reports, I've got a sales user that's coming on board now, and he needs access to be able to manage and work with those job reports, that job reports list. And so to do this, we'll go ahead and go into job reports and edit our permissions setting. And so you can see in this scenario with that new intern that joined the sales department, I'm just going to add him to the sales group. It makes a good amount of sense. And so also he'll need to be granted the sales permissions in order to have access to this job report. So we're really just giving him access to job reports here. So when we edit the permissions for job reports, we're going to be creating a unique permission, and it will no longer inherit permissions from its parent. This is kind of critical. Remember how we talked about this earlier. Permissions at a subsite, which is what we're at here, job reports or a sublist, come down from the parent, right? If you want to make modifications at that level, you've got to stop inheriting. And just by making modifications at this level, I'm automatically going to stop inheriting from my parent. So it's important to realize what's kind of going on in the background here. So if I go to my, let's go to my actions list here, right, as we've already done, and we're adding these permissions. And so I'm just going to go ahead and select. Let me see where I am here. I lost my track because I went off into a different thing, area. So I'm going to go and customize these reports. So under my permissions and policies, there we go. I want to go to permissions for this list. All right, you can see my sales group already appears here. But I'm going to edit these permissions specifically for job reports only. You can see we're definitely at the scope of job reports. So as you're going through managing these things, be very conscious of looking at the top and seeing exactly what area or what part of the site you're located in, right? And in this case, we're specifically in the job reports list. So now if I go to my actions and I choose to edit permissions, it's going to let me know, hey, you're about to create unique permissions for this list. Changing the permissions in this list are going to prevent parent site permissions from affecting it. All right. I'm going to say okay here, but that's the one warning that you get. Now I can get the checkboxes so I can go and manage these individual groups at the list level. So if I click on sales and I go to new, add users, I'm going to add my new intern here, Jyothi. Hi. All right. And what we're going to do is specifically give him that sales. And I'm going to add users to a SharePoint group, and I'm going to choose that sales group there, all right? So I'm not even applying the permissions directly to the user. I'm really just applying it to the group here. And so if we say scroll down this list, and again, I'll turn off that send welcome messages. So if we say okay here, we now have our new user added to the list of all the other users, right? You can see all the other users are still here. And he'll have the same permissions as the other users in the sales department. And so rather than granting those permissions at the top level, I'm just doing it here at the individual list level. So we're done adding that user to the group. We're done managing those permissions. Now let's take another scenario, a little bit different, right? So rather than granting certain permissions within a group and adding users for access inside the group, we can grant permissions solely to the individual as well. So rather than modifying the group permissions here, let's do one more scenario. In our next scenario, we'll just have a member of the IT department that will be granting access for maintaining job reports, let's say. We'll stick with the job reports list. So in my site settings here, so I'll go back to my site settings, under site action, sorry. And under my site administration, I'll just click libraries and lists again. There's a lot of other ways I could have navigated here, but sometimes we like to be consistent. So you can see we're going to the same place we were before. We're going to customize job reports. And under my permissions, I'll go to, again, permissions for this list. And so in new, now I'm going to add users. I'm going to add a specific user here, Brian Cox. He's maybe my new IT department individual who needs access to job reports to do customization and things. And so for Brian Cox, and I'll just check his name, make sure it's valid. I typed it in, right? Looks good. I'm going to give this permission directly to Brian. So we're going to say, and you could choose, you could have a custom permission, whatever you want. I'm just going to use one of the default permission levels here called design, as we talked about what design can do. Edit lists, document libraries, pages within a website. I'm going to remove that send welcome message one last time. We'll say OK here. And if I look under central administration again, I'm going to look at all my site content. And we can see we've actually already now we've configured specifically for Brian Cox the individual permission at the list level. You notice how we didn't get, I'm actually done with that, so we didn't get the pop-up again, did we? Where we had, we were prompted that, hey, we're going to be changing the permissions at the list level, so we're going to stop inheriting, right? Because that had already happened, right? So Brian now has individual permissions just to that job reports list. I wanted to do one more thing, because this is, again, new stuff, right? So now we're going to essentially create a new SharePoint group and assign it to a folder, right? To a folder directly. So again, this procedure can only be performed on a list that is inheriting permissions from its parent site. So this is a little bit of a different scenario. That's why we're going back to the top level again. So looking at all my site content here, I can see I have one called Help Fold. That's my Help folder. And I'm going to jump in here, and you're offered an option to manage permissions within the folder. And in our scenario, we want to add our newly formed sales group to the help folder and grant the permissions. So we're just going to take that sales group all over again. So here I'm going to go in and click and select to manage my permissions again. So we're going to take the content list dropdown. Specifically, I'm looking for the content list here. And we're going to choose to manage permissions. And you can see where Inc. Administrator is here. And I'm going to choose to edit permissions here. And again, we get the pop-up that says that we're creating unique permissions for this folder. And I'll say OK. I'm ready to change this folder's unique permissioning. And I won't be inheriting from my parent anymore. And so we'll go back to my actions here. Right, we'll say, well, I'll go back to new and we'll say add users. And the user I'm going to add here is the sales. And we'll see that it does recognize that as the sales group. And so in this section here, we're going to select sales and marketing department as the permission. All right. And then we're going to go ahead and remove that send welcome message. Say OK. So we've granted the sales permission level that we created earlier, that custom one we created earlier. And the sales group is now available for access with the help folder. Also, it has been given the custom sales permission level to the help folder. So if you were to create a new SharePoint group within the folder, you would go to the people and groups page where you can add users to your new SharePoint group that way. There's lots of different ways to do this stuff. I'm just giving you kind of an idea, a heads up on some of the ways to accomplish it. So again, all you have to do is go in, change permissions at the list level, it'll stop inheriting, but then you'll be able to have that custom unique permissioning level. And then that is what we've accomplished here. We'll just give it a second here as we exit out of sharing. I'll jump back into my slides. We'll see where we are in our agenda. We're cooking along. We're getting towards the end here. Last thing we want to do is kind of go in and configure this web form. All right, and so we can see that there are many different types of topologies that you can have in a web form configuration. And so if we look at, you know, SharePoint Server Portal Server, for example, 2003, there were only a small number of topologies that were actually supported by Microsoft, which was like, for example, anything from the simplest, which was a single server, up to, you know, small server farms, all the way up to large server farms. But a lot of these scenarios that people were implementing were not supported by Microsoft. SQL Server 2007 really changes this, kind of brings to bear a number of different web form configurations that are supported and that are offered as options. So a medium server topology requires, at a minimum, one front-end server. Let's take a look at the medium. You can see here, one front-end server, could be multiple. In this case, we've got a couple. Running a search application, one index job server running SPS, one database server, Service Pack 3. So a lot of requirements were pretty steep. Large server farm topologies get much more complex. They can get extremely complex. So this can consist of 2 to 8 servers, you know, running SharePoint, assigned the web service. We commonly call this the front end web server, right? 2 to 4 servers running SharePoint assigned the search service, 1 or 2 or 3 or up to 4 sometimes servers running SharePoint assigned the index service. This is the one that's assigned that job server role. So there could be any number of servers running SQL as well. In all of these supported topologies, you can use a single additional server running SharePoint for the purpose of running this backward-compatible document library. So let's take a little closer look at the farm topology. So the first kind of factor is the server in this server component matrix is where you'll need more servers to run a minimum large farm here. So first thing we do is medium server farms become large server farms by adding web, search, front-end servers, using network load balancing, of course, to distribute that load. And then they'll add search and indexing servers to the server component. So as long as you stay within the boundaries of a normal prescribed server farm, any combination of these can be employed, right? Now, one thing to be aware of is you can only have up to 4 index servers in a large server farm because each search server can consume, can really only consume 4 separate catalogs. So the most common medium farm topology consists of 2 front-end web servers running search and indexing, 1 doing a SQL component in the back end. That's a total of 4 servers. So one is doing, 2 of the front-end servers doing search and indexing, One's doing SQL and then the SharePoint. So there's the SQL component can either be a single server or a clustered server. And a clustered server kind of acts like one system. So it really will be considered one component, but it might be multiple actual pieces of hardware there. SharePoint really doesn't care, you know, what the SQL server topology is, in fact. So this is totally abstracted from the server farm environment. So you can really be running any supported SQL topology. We already mentioned kind of what some of those were. So a large server farm is similar to a medium server farm, except that the search and web components run on separate systems, typically. So you break apart the web from the search for improved performance. So large server farms can support more servers than a medium farm, clearly. And the minimum topology, really, for a large server farm is two front-end web servers running SharePoint, two search servers running SharePoint, one, let's see, index management server running SharePoint, one database component, that could be, again, multiple SQL servers. And essentially that's it. So one database component running Microsoft SQL. The SQL component could be either a single server or clustered, but again, it acts like one, essentially. So both of these, medium and large server farms, depending on what you want to go with, running one server with backward-compatible document libraries. They both run one server with backward-compatible document libraries. You need to have that if you want to incorporate it with the existing SQL 2000, I'm sorry, the server, SharePoint Server 2003 scenario. So really, there can only be one server in the farm that has these backward-compatible components. All right. So that's kind of an overview of the farm topology. How can we make this secure? Well, a successful server topology design incorporates dedicated web front ends for security's sake. The networking topology design has all servers within the farm that reside in a single data center on a single VLAN. We need to focus on a good logical architecture, right? This has at least one zone in each web application that uses Windows authentication. This is required for the search account to crawl the content within the web application. So without that zone, right, in each web application that uses Windows authentication, we can't do that search functionality. If you want to implement web applications using host headers instead of the randomly generated port numbers, they're automatically assigned to the That's fine. So don't use IIS host header bindings if the web application will be hosting host header-based site collections, right? So in a reverse proxy environment, really think about using the default port. So if you're reverse proxying with SharePoint, use the default port for the public-facing network, and then use a non-default port on your internal network. So this can prevent simple port attacks, right, or at least slow them down a little bit. Don't put untrusted sites into the same web application as trusted sites. This will protect you against those intra-domain scripting attacks that happen a lot. All right? So kind of that site-to-site attack. What else should we talk about for security? Let's see. The operating system has a server operating system. It should be configured with the NTFS file system, of course. Clocks on all the servers within the farm should be synchronized. This maintains the accuracy of log files and things. Of course, hardening your operating systems are critical. I don't think I need to mention that. If your servers are not inside a physically secure data center, right, so where network eavesdropping threat is considered relatively insignificant, then you'll need to want to use encrypted communication channels between the different servers. So IPsec and SSL. And so in Windows SharePoint services, also Office SharePoint portal server farms, the server communication is extensive. I mean, there's a lot of talking that's going on between these. So securing that is critical to protecting your data. Again, assuming that you are not in a physically secure environment. SSL and IPsec can both be used to protect that communication between servers. Which method you want to pick really depends on what the specific communication channels you are securing, right? SSL strictly for web communication, IPsec can be used for any network level traffic, any traffic really at all. There are benefits and trade-offs to each option, right? IPsec is really recommended for protecting communication channels between two servers, right, and restricting which computers can communicate with each other. So, for example, you might help protect a database server by establishing a policy that really permits requests only from a trusted client computer, such as an application or web server. You can also restrict communication to specific IP protocols. So really, in general, the recommendation for using SSL is to use it whenever you need granular protection for a particular app instead of all applications. So SSL must be implemented by the individual applications themselves. So you really don't use SSL to encrypt all communications between hosts. SSL is less flexible. It really only supports authentication by means of public key certificates, as we know. So you have to at least have some certificates available for that to happen. So it's really not practical to secure all of your client-server communication. So there are some scenarios, though, where you might want to secure a little bit of it. In those cases, SSL is generally recommended way to go between your client and your server. Now, beware, SSL is really going to have the potential to decrease the performance of your network. So when you optimize SSL, use it for only the pages that require it. And this includes pages that contain or capture sensitive data, of course, or passwords or other personal data. Use it only if you want to encrypt the page data or you want to guarantee that the server to which you are sending the data is what you expect. So you want to prevent against this, the rogue servers out there. All right, a couple more little quick blurbs here, and then we're going to jump off into a final demo. This last demo is going to be awesome. We're going to go in and actually create forms authentication. So we're going to create a new site application. We're going to create anonymous access. This is for that scenario where you want to provide, you know, internet access for anonymous users. And we're going to set up forms authentication to capture those anonymous users and provide that custom experience for them. So that non-VPN type access. Before we jump into that, let's just quickly, last thing on security hardening. A lot of these are pretty common sense. There are a lot of guidelines, really, that are recommended for securing specific roles. So the order in which the settings are applied and the applications are installed is prescribed as well. You know, you really have to install things in the proper order. Of course, we apply patches first and then updates to the OS. And then we harden network settings, operating system settings, and we finally follow it up by hardening the specific applications. Each of these guides that you can access, really, on the download.microsoft.com site, if you just go to microsoft.com/technet and look for the SharePoint Res Kit, you'll find a lot of information out there about how this stuff goes. But the security design and the hardening guidance provided there is based on practices that we've gotten back from customers. A lot of customers have talked about the best way to do this. So really, it provides just a baseline for securing and hardening your farm. Essentially, the server-to-server communication within the SharePoint Office suite and the server farms and the specific features we've already talked about as well. So you can see the secure design and the server-server hardening. This really brings together kind of a full picture. Let's go ahead and go through setting up this really nice forms-based authentication. Right? Again, this might be what you came for. If you've zoned away a little bit, time to join us again. We got a good demo coming up here, provided, once again, that it works out and shows for everybody. And just to reset us back at the top level here, we're going to go back to central administration. And what we're going to do in this case is we're going to create a new SharePoint group. Right? We've already done that before, but this we're going to create a new site application, right? And use forms authentication on that site. So we're going to start from scratch with a brand new site. We're also going to, at the end here, we're grant the site anonymous access and then use that web.config file to set up the site for the connection. Then finally, we'll create an ASP.NET website to create that database and add that we can add users and roles that will be used for that forms authentication. We're going to go through everything in pretty good detail here, so check this out. So first thing is we're going to create a new website called Test Security Site. So I'm going to click on Application Management over here, and I'm going to create or extend a web application. In our case, we're going to be creating it. And when this comes up, we'll say create new web application, and we'll go ahead and give a nice friendly name for that. In our case, instead of SharePoint 35873, we're going to give it a friendly name of Test Security Site. All right, so Test Security Site. We'll stick with the default. The port here, by the way, is chosen randomly, all right, when you create the new site, but you can certainly choose a different port provided it's open and available. All right, it even tells me at the top, by the way, this is not encrypted for secure communication, so make sure that if you are sending secure information that you choose to encrypt this before. My authentication provider here, NTLM, that's good, right? Under Allow Anonymous, I'm going to select off Yes, all right? And remember, we've got to go to the IIS site before we can actually have this take effect. But I'll select as Yes for right now. And for the application pool side, I'm going to go ahead and create a new application pool. The application pool name, and we'll just go ahead and go with the application pool name as it is. So we'll also go in and configure this, right? So we configure the actual username and password to manage this new site. We'll go ahead and call it administrator, and I'll type in my password here. And for my search server, we're going to select off my only search server that's available. That's the Moz server. Happens to also be the current server that I'm connected on. All right. I'll just go ahead and say OK. Now, this might take just a minute or two to take effect. So let me just go through a little bit about what we did. So I should have gotten to that a little quicker. But what we did is there we created a website, a new site, essentially, a new site application, as it's called. Right? And so when you enable, what we're going to do is we're going to enable anonymous access to the site. We're essentially allowing anonymous users and authenticated users who have not been granted access to the site to browse the entire website, including any lists, libraries, folders, list items, documents, anything within this site that I'm creating, they'll be able to see. So whether they're authenticated, unauthenticated, granted access, not granted access, doesn't make any difference. They'll be able to access the site through the anonymous access. All right. So enabling that makes the website or server, of course, inherently less secure. All right. But in our scenario, we want to create an application that allows anonymous access through forms authentication. And so this setup is very popular. When do you use it? Whenever users need to log on, right? And they need a logon screen to access an application, rather than using their built-in Windows authentication. So I don't know if it was an order system, if it was a contractor's website so they could enter in their billable hours, right? If it was an extranet scenario so another customer could order parts from your site, right? These are all scenarios where I might implement this. If I wanted to provide simple access to my sales team without having them have the VPN in, right? So we can provide this kind of forms-based anonymous access. The first step in creating forms authentication is to create the web application, which is what we've already done. And for our application, we want to create the new IIS website so we can differentiate it from our Litware site, right? So we essentially created a whole new website to differentiate it. So when we create the new site, SharePoint automatically assigned it a random port, as you saw. And so we essentially went through with mostly with the default settings. For the database server, you might have noticed when we went to the database side, you can use, good, our application is created, so we're in good shape. But for the database side, just really quickly, database side, you can use, you know, the database authentication, or you can use Windows, right? So SQL or Windows authentication. In our example, you might have seen we use Windows authentication. That's fine. Again, your communication with your SQL server is going to be secure on the back end one way or the other. Just a matter of what your application and your SQL side prefers. All right, so let's move on. We created our new web application. Now we're going to create a new Windows SharePoint Services site collection. So in order to do that, in fact, it tells me here that that's the next obvious step. So create a new Windows SharePoint Services site collection. So I'm going to grant anonymous access only on lists and libraries and block anonymous access on the rest of the site. That's a good best practice. But before we do that, let's go ahead and go to my title here. We'll go, again, test security site. And for description, we'll say test site application, just to make it friendly so we know what we're doing here. We're going to create a site at this at a specific URL. And that URL path is root. So that a user can access it from the Litware home site. So by using my root directory, I ensure that a user could access it even from the Litware home site. All right, so for the primary site collection administrator, again, I'm going to go with administrator. There's also a secondary site collection administrator. I'm going to go with the same one. In most cases, you probably would want to try to have two separate site collection administrators for different purposes, right? And in the templates, we're going to select off a template, and our template is going to be the Internet Presence website. But you can see there's several templates that are provided for you by default, a team site, a blank site so you can build it from scratch. A blog site, so if you want to create a blog, very easy to do that, public-facing blog. It's essentially choosing, what we have here are a number of templates that are common scenarios that we expect SharePoint to be used for external anonymous access. So we've kind of given you those default templates to make it easy to get started. So I'll say okay. I'm not going to put a quota on this, just not necessary for my little scenario. So once this gets done and our site is created, we're going to go out and check it out, see what it looks like. Because we'll have a brand new website with a new web application there. All right, so I want to go back to what I said right at the beginning when I started this creation of the site collection process. And what I wanted to emphasize was, so if anonymous access has been enabled, right, as we've done here, members of the SharePoint group can grant anonymous access on a site. Grant anonymous access on lists and libraries and block anonymous access on the site. So they can do a number of things. So what I wanted to do here was to create my new site collection and then essentially set it up as an Internet Presence site so I can manage that more effectively. All right, while we're waiting here, I'm going to take a quick sip of water. All right, and so it automatically shows me the top-level site was created successfully. I can go ahead and take a look. By the way, keep track of that port number. We'll need that a little bit later. 35873. Right, I've got to speed up here a little bit. 35873 is the port number. It's just opening up the new site that was created for me. And so in order to specifically grant it anonymous access, I haven't really done that yet. You know, I selected off the anonymous access checkbox. One of the critical things to be aware of is that in order to really make sure this is anonymous access, I have to come in here and specifically manage it at the site level through the site administration tool, which is what I'm going to be doing now. That's why I'm going out to the website. So we'll go into our newly formed test security site. And I will, you can see there's a check, there's an option right on the first page here to go ahead and enable anonymous access. And so what comes up here is kind of a change anonymous access page. It asks me if I want to do that. I'm going to just go ahead and check off the entire website, but you can see you can just enable anonymous access for lists and libraries or for nothing, right? You can say anonymous access is users can access nothing. In my case, I'm going to go ahead, which would essentially, by the way, nothing denies anonymous access to the entire site. So you're enabling it, but at the same time forcing it, nobody to be able to get to anything. So the only two that make sense really for most people is going to be lists and libraries or entire website. I'm going to go with my entire website. And as soon as we get confirmation on that, we can go ahead and close Internet Explorer. That looks good. Go back to our central administration, and I'm going to click on the application management side again. I'm going to go ahead and click my application providers. Sorry. Authentication providers, there we go. And I'm going to click on Windows. And then the authentication type, I'm going to select forms. And I'm just going to, so you can see here, we could enable anonymous access, which is what we've done. So we've got the checkbox enabled. We're turning on forms authentication. I'm getting rid of Windows. You see we had to go out to the website first and manage and turn on anonymous access there. And now we can turn on forms authentication. And the member provider name, I need to give it a name. Since we want to set up our site to use anonymous access, we need to verify it's enabled. And for our membership provider name, we need to use the offered ASP.NET SQL membership provider. So there's a specific name for the provider that we're going to be using. This is the one that comes with SQL. So ASP.NET SQL membership provider. All one word. There we go. I don't need to worry about a role manager. I don't need to worry about client integration. Everything looks good. I'll just go ahead and save it now as is. Now we're going to create the ASP.NET SQL database. So I'll close out Internet Explorer. I'm going to go to my command prompt. So we're outside of SharePoint now, right? And we're going to create that ASP.NET database to store all of our roles and users for forms authentication. And how I'm going to do this is I'm going to go to Windows, Microsoft.net. This is the folder, of course, where I could find the ASP.NET tools framework and V2O. Oops. V2.0.50727. There we go. And I'm going to run the ASP.NET reg and register SQL. What's going to come up here is a nice little wizard for the SQL Server setup for ASP.NET. Again, this comes when I have my SQL Server installation. This is one of the free providers in there, right? So I'm going to go ahead and select an option, the Configure SQL Server for Application Services. My server is fine. And I'm going to use the Windows authentication to authenticate to SQL. See my database currently set to default, but I can change a different database if I want to. And I'm just going to confirm my settings look good, click next, and then as soon as it gets done, we'll go ahead and finish it out. So not too difficult, just setting up the SQL database. Next, after this, we're going to need to edit the web config files for the site. Remember the web config files that are created? And on that site that I created, right? The test security site, we'll need to go ahead and edit those for the SharePoint 3.0 central administration. In order to know the directory location of our web config files, we're just going to use IIS Manager to find the home directory path. So that looks good. Let's close that out then. Minimize that. I'll double click my IIS server here. And I'll check out my different websites on my MOS IIS server. And I'll just right click on my SharePoint server administration. So SharePoint Central Administration V3. Go to my properties for that. And I'll be able to find the home directory very quickly this way. All right. And so you can see my home directory here. And I'll just copy that out. And we'll cancel that. So we've got the location of that home directory. And I'm just going to go through Internet Explorer to go there. All right, there's my web config file that I need. So I'll just double-click on the web config file. And it's associated with a Visual Web Developer 2005 Express. And I'm just going to scroll down. And we know what the portion of the file that we need to manage is. Right? It's the system.web portion. So this is the Web Developer Express edition I'm using. It just happens to be a useful way to manage these files. Which, since it has the syntax and command line entries and everything recognized, so I can make sure I don't make any typos and things. But you can use whatever editor tool you want. What I want to do here is enter in some more information. Oops. Right above System Web. And so we'll enter that in for us. Now, what I need to do is grab, just so I don't have to type anything out manually here, the connection string. So we'll copy that, and all this is doing is adding that local SQL server and pointing it to use that provider for authentication, right, instead of the default. Right? So all I'm going to do is enter that information and by pasting it directly into my web.config file. This enables us to use forms authentication for our site access. So I'll close this out. It'll ask me if I want to save. I'll say yes. Let's go back to Internet Explorer very quickly. Actually, Windows Explorer. This time I'm going to go to the virtual directories, right? So up one level here. And I'll open up that port number of that site that we created earlier, 35873. You can see there's another web config file, right? This one we'll need to modify as well. So we'll just open that up, do the same thing, scroll down to system.web, enter a new line, paste in our copied text for connection string, close that out again, and save. Go back to my command prompt for a minute. In order to make sure this stuff takes effect, we'll do IIS reset, and we should see an attempt to stop the IIS server and restart it. Almost done here, cranking it out. I hope this is valuable information for you. I think it is. It's good to see the process in action, really see how we change that provider, because there are a number of steps that we might not be intuitively aware of, right? And so this is, I think it's good, hopefully, for you to see this. All right, so next step, started to restart the service. So on the desktop here, I'm just going to open up the Web Developer Express again. Let me get rid of some of this extracurricular stuff. and we're going to go to File, and we're going to click on and create a new website here. So once we have our web config files edited, we need to create a new ASP.NET site and add users to that site. All right, so in order to do this, we're going to use this same tool we had earlier, the Web Developer Express. So it's an ASP.NET website. I can leave the defaults here. So you'd see you could select a different language if you wanted to modify or work with a different programming language. You could certainly do that. Everything looks pretty good. All right, and you see over here I have the web config file created for me again. And I'm going to go ahead and open that up. And just like the other two web config files, the connection string has to be entered exactly the same as it was entered in the other web config files to ensure that proper connection is made. So right down here, I'm going to select off, actually I need to go up to the top here. So under connection strings, I'm just going to select that entire batch of text there and paste in my connection strings text. And I'll just go to save this. Save this web config file. And then I'll go ahead and build my website out. All right, looks like it's going pretty good. And we'll go ahead over here and click on my ASP.NET configuration button. And Internet Explorer should open. And I'm going to go into the security tab here, and I'm going to use the security setup wizard to configure security step by step. It's a really quick and easy way to get my security right on this particular new site that I've created. So I'll use the security setup wizard to configure security step by step. And I'll say next. My access method is going to be from the internet. So it's not coming from my local network. The users that will be coming in will be coming from the internet. In the advanced provider settings page, we'll just go ahead and define some roles for this website, enable roles for the website. And the create new roles, I'm just going to create a couple of roles here. One specifically, the role I'll need is administrator. Administrator. So we'll add that role. And for my user, my sign up account, I'm going to type administrator here. There's a tie to that role. And the password is, well, we'll enter a password in here. And I'll give it a nice friendly email. Bookwareinc.com. Security question, I don't know, dog or Skippy. Short question. All right, so my account was successfully created. I'll continue on. As you can see, you could enter certainly a new account if you wanted to. I'm just going to go ahead and click Next. And my new access role is going to be permission will be allow. And we're finished, right? So we're going to take a look over here. You can see you could check out the different roles that we can have. All right, so existing roles I have is one. And you can see the users we have is one. So once finished, we have the roles we can use to manage this stuff. So if you wanted to create new roles and users, you could add or delete them as needed right here. But I'm almost done. Last step is to go into my SharePoint site. Site administration one last time. It's going to open up the website to manage that site. And I'm going to click back on application management. And We just need to adjust the site administrator for our website. And this is the reason, really, why we needed to edit the web.config file for the central administration site. Because the administrator that was added earlier is actually an Active Directory account. That Active Directory account has been removed now. So now we need to add the user that was created with the ASP.NET website. Hopefully that makes sense for you. If not, watch the webcast later and rewind. All right, so let's check it out. So in the navigation pane, we'll click on Application Management. And under the SharePoint Site Administration, we're going to click on Site Collection Administrators. There we go. And in the Site Collection list, we're going to change the site collection. When this comes up, we're going to also change the web application. All right, so we're going to jump one level deeper. And we want to change the web application to test security site. And that looks good. So we'll say OK. The primary site collection administrator now is, so we're just changing that site collection administrator to administrator from the Litware Inc. AD account, which is no longer available. We'll click OK. And we'll go ahead now and test everything out, make sure it works. So I'm going to go ahead and sign out. And yes, I'll allow that to close the window. And we'll just open up Internet Explorer one more time. And now if all goes well, the new account that we created should be able to manage and be associated with that test security site. I should be able to log in and access that site effectively. And this would essentially complete our site creation process. At this point, we'd have any number of users that we're going to have start coming in, start authenticating them against my new database, I'd be good to go. Let's see if this goes as planned here. So we'll click on the My Links, and we'll go to My SharePoint, and we'll click off that test security site. Oop. I think I just went a little too quick before. Let's see if it comes up a little bit better. We'll just go ahead and jump into our test security site. By the way, there's a whole list of information on the MSDN site about creating these connection strings. You can actually go to the TechNet site as well. There's a number of sites that do talk about connection strings and ASP.NET. So we just pulled that one down from locally. Default my site. You want to set this default? Yes. Fine. My links. Yes, so we can jump in here and manage your links, change your site location, your default My Site, and go to the test security site here as well. All righty. So there's a couple of different sites we can get to. I could also add my links to add the test security site this way. So there's a number of ways we can get to this information. All right. Looks pretty good. Let's jump out of here. Summarize kind of what we talked about today. We went through a lot of different stuff. I hope it was beneficial to you. Again, we talked about setting up initially just basic users and permissions. Talked about using the new groups to control the parent site level settings. We talked about how the authentication providers are now pluggable inside of SharePoint. So we got a lot of good information in a fairly short amount of time. I hope it was information was valuable to you. As we finally walk through at the towards the end there, where we set up our SharePoint websites for management administration to actually be able to go into the item level side, and then finally changing from Windows authentication provider to using the ASP.NET provider. So hopefully that will be beneficial to you going forward as you set up your hosted or set up your otherwise managed sites. And we look forward to having you off for future webcasts. I'm going to turn back over to Eric.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. Since we are over time, I just want to get this survey up and give you all a chance to fill it out. I do want to thank Sean Travers for presenting today, and also to Brian Von Axelson for answering all your questions via text while we are going. That does conclude today's TechNet webcast. Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to fill out the survey before you go, but you may now disconnect from the audio portion of this conference.
Hello, thank you for listening to this webcast. We value your feedback, so please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio.com/survey to complete a quick evaluation. Thank you.